You know, for some time, last year and the year before, when everybody was in a panic about what they were going to do, everybody was interested in this status, and we were doing a lot of larger classes. But everybody seems to have decided that, hey, it's no big deal anymore, and they don't realize that they're in the calm before the storm. And in order to take advantage of this status, you got to have it in place. You can't come back later once you have a problem and change your status, and they're not going to recognize it. They're saying, oh, well, you just did that in order to get out of this.
The storm is brewing now. They're just not looking for it. They're just complacent in their own.
Well, they're too busy. Oh, things are back to normal. Let's go have a good time. Let's go to the beach. Let's do this and this, do that. There's nothing more important than changing your status. If you want to be a slave, don't bother. Because what we're going to talk about is what gives them the right to pass codes and laws and tell you you have to do something.
It gives them the right. They're so much better than us. That's what.
You're going to have to say that comment. You're going to have to be on the mic for some of these comments and stuff. You know, the point is that... I'm just waiting for everybody to get this stuff. Everybody signed in? Did everybody get their name? Even if you've had it before, please get your name on there, because I keep track of everybody that takes the class, because I can look back and see when they're there and if I'm sending something out, you know, who's got it, who doesn't. Well, you guys, I know this stuff. I've been doing this for quite a while with Roger. And I've gone through all these other processes out there. You know, I've gone around and around with the Anna Von Wright's program several times. I've gone to other people. I've gone to the David Strait classes several times. I've looked at others out there that all claim to have the right stuff. There's more and more people coming on all the time saying they've got the answer. And then there's a lot of people that say, I don't want to claim any status. Is that smart? If the government recognizes a status that gives you freedom, what do you want to be known as? A nothing? Or do you want to be a status they absolutely recognize and will respect? So I think it's kind of crazy to say, I just want to be a native. You want to be something that they recognize that they can't enforce codes on you. Because that's the only way you're going to be able to function in this coming society. Okay, so... the first thing we're going to do, we're going to go down the one that's called Subject, U.S. Citizens, or Property. Okay, it's the one that's got red and black on it. It's on both sides. Right, very top, Subject. That's the one you were asking about, Ash. It's on both sides. It's red and black, Subject, U.S. Citizens, or Property. Everybody got it? Okay, the reason I like to start here is that when I tell people that they don't have access to, quote, constitutional rights, everybody gets their back up and they want to argue. And this is a series of court cases that explain clearly that there are two statuses and you don't have access to it. So the first one that we have here is U.S. v. Anthony. And you can read along with me. It's just I want to get these on the tape, but you read along. The term resident and citizen of the United States, this means a 14th Amendment citizen, is distinguished from a citizen of one of the several states in that the former is a special class of citizen created by Congress. Prior to the establishment of the 14th Amendment, there was no such thing as citizen of the United States. Everybody knew who the citizens of the United States were when they passed the 14th Amendment because they were all black. So how did you all of a sudden become known as a citizen of the United States? We're going to get into that. But it's important to know there's a distinction here. We have in our political system a government of the United States and a government of each of the several states. Each one of these governments is distinct from the others, and each has citizens of its own. United States v. Cruikshank, U.S. Supreme Court case. There again, they're telling you there's two statuses. And then it goes on to the next case, McDonald v. the state. He was not a citizen of the United States. Again, a 14th Amendment citizen. He was a citizen and voter of the state. One may be a citizen of a state, notice that's capitalized, and yet not a citizen of the United States. Next case is Tashiro v. Jordan. That there is a citizenship of the United States, again, a 14th Amendment citizen, and a citizenship of a state. Notice that's a small s state. Kitchens v. Steele. A citizen of the United States is a citizen, 14th Amendment citizen, of the federal government. Final case, Belmont v. Town of Gulfport. Taxpayers are not de jure state citizens. Next one is State v. Manuel. The term citizen in the United States means United States citizen or legal fiction. It is analogous to the term subject in common law. The change of phrase has resulted from the change in government. Do you realize what they did when they passed the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments was to flip our government? That's where they did it. Now, there's no questions. We're going to go right through it. In my normal class, this is why it takes a long time, I always stop and have people ask their questions. But we are trying to cram 8 hours into an hour and a half. Okay, the next case we're talking about, and this is another Supreme Court case that's very important. Jones v. Temer. Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment protects very few rights because it neither incorporates the Bill of Rights nor protects all rights of individual citizens. Instead, this provision protects only those rights peculiar to being a citizen of the federal government. It does not protect those rights which relate to state citizenship. You see how they bifurcated things right there? Specifically, wherever you get your rights plus the duties that are subscribed to you is where you get your remedy. So if you're under the 14th Amendment under federal citizenship, your remedy comes someplace different than those people who are state citizens and get their remedy from the state, the Attorney General. We're finding out that the Attorney General of the state wears two hats. He wears the hats of the federal citizen overlay, which is like state of California. California state is the actual state. You can always tell when you're under the so-called corporation, we're using that just kind of loosely, because it's always going to be state of, county of, et cetera, et cetera. So instead of county of Riverside, it's Riverside County. That's on the land. So the authorities there have taken over those positions, and they made it look like we got the original same government structure there. But everybody's wearing two hats. And so far, nobody's holding their feet to the fire in terms of providing us with the remedies that we should have as a national or a state citizen, small s state citizen. So that's part of the stuff that everybody's working on right now is to get that clarified. All right, so we've got Supreme Court v. Valentine. Now, this is a very important case. The only absolute and unqualified right of a United States citizen is to residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States. Does it say anything about the Bill of Rights? It doesn't. Next case is the 14th Amendment recognized that an individual citizen of one of the several states without being a citizen of the United States. And notice they use United States all the time instead of United States of America. But when they passed the 14th Amendment, everything, the United States and the United States of America are two different classes of countries. Those are the Slaughterhouse cases, and it's also associated with the Cruikshank cases. These are very important cases in the past that kind of outline all this stuff. More recent case, it says, both before and after the 14th Amendment to the federal Constitution, it has not been necessary for a person to be a citizen of the United States in order to be a citizenship of his state. That's Cruikshank again. The courts presume you to be a federal citizen without telling you that there are different classes of citizens. It's up to you to dispute this. Use your passport and the actual birth certificate. Let's turn it over and say the other side. So what does that lead to? Unless the defendant can prove he is not a citizen of the United States, the IRS has the right to inquire and determine a tax liability. That's Slater, U.S. v. Slater. So there's a presumption here automatically that they brought everybody in under. So no longer were they given the blacks protection from their state, and we're going to go over that in a little bit. They sucked us into this whole thing too. And that's why they can kind of come around and tell you what to do. The governments of the United States and of each state of the several states are distinct from one another. The rights of a citizen under one may be quite different from those which he has under the other. So in order to be a citizen of the national state, it used to be you were had to be born in one of the several states. But we didn't call ourselves United States citizens. We were citizen of Arizona. We were citizen. If you look into the federal code, you'll find out that each state has a nationality attached to it. That is that where you were born or naturalized is the nationality that you have at that point in time. Because anybody can change their status as long as they were born here or naturalized here. Once you're naturalized, it's assumed that you have born here. So you have the same rights as the state citizen. Next case is Rush Strat for the People. There is a difference between privileges and immunities belonging to the citizens of the United States, which is a 14th Amendment citizen, as such, and those belonging to the citizens of each state. You've got different rules. But they didn't teach you any of this in school. They didn't explain it to you. They didn't tell you there were different classes of people. Right? Therefore, U.S. citizens, citizen of the federal corporation, residing in one of the states of the union, are classified as property and franchises of the federal government as an individual entity. That's Wheeling Steel versus Fox. And this follows on. This is Hague v. CIO. The first eight amendments have uniformly been held not to be protected from state action by the privileges and immunities clause of the 14th Amendment. It's telling you right there, you don't have access to freedom of speech, Second Amendments, and all of the other protections that you have under the Bill of Rights. Those are the first eight amendments, right? Why would you want to stay in that status? It's case after case after case, and yet everybody says, thank God I'm American. At least I know I'm free. They're singing those songs all day and every day. Have we heard anything here that you're free? You're under control, or you're answering to somebody. Again, that's the formula. Wherever you're getting your rights from, that the correlated duties equals whatever your remedies are going to be and how you approach them. That kind of gets back to the thing when you're in a court situation a lot of times, and people are wanting to talk about the Constitution, and the judge says, don't bring up the Constitution in here. You bring up the Constitution one more time, and I'm going to put you in jail for contempt. And the guy stands there wondering, well, I thought we had a constitution. I thought we had these rules over us. This is how they're getting around all that stuff. They're passing all these laws, but did everybody knock on your door and tell you that this all changed years ago? You see all these people standing around. We've got constitutional rights. Constitution doesn't give you any rights. You are not a party to the Constitution. It gives you protections if you're in the proper status. It does not give you rights. For us as nationals, we have access to the Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights is a thou shalt not. Thou shalt not inhibit free speech. Thou shalt not prohibit the Second Amendment, etc., etc., etc. So the first eight amendments, as I said, have uniformly been held not to be protected from state action by the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment. Twining versus New Jersey, this is a longer one. The right to trial in civil cases, guaranteed by the Seventh Amendment, and the right to bear arms guaranteed by the Second Amendment have been distinctly held not to be privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. And in effect, the same decision was made in respect to the guarantee against prosecution, except by indictment of a grand jury contained in the Fifth Amendment and in the respect of the right to be confronted with witnesses contained in the Sixth Amendment. It was held that the indictment made indispensable by the Fifth Amendment and trial by jury guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment were not privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States, as those words were used in the 14th Amendment. We conclude, therefore, that the exemption from compulsory self-incrimination is not a privilege and immunity of a national federal citizenship guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. Does that give you good feelings? Does that make you wonder, well, what the hell's going on? How come they didn't tell us anything about this in school? How come we didn't have civic classes? How come we didn't have law classes? How come we didn't have money classes teaching us how our money system works? Because they want you ignorant. That's the only conclusion I can come to. And they don't want to discuss it. And the last time and the worst place to try to discuss this stuff is when you're being called into some kind of court action. And you're going to argue that you've got rights and you've got privileges and stuff, and you do, but not the ones that you're thinking about, that they've always told you that you have. The acceptance of a license in whatever form will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or to comply with any provision of the statute or with regulations prescribed that are repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. That means if you get a license, you shouldn't have to lose all of your rights. But if you get caught and you get stopped for some kind of traffic infraction or something, they're hauling you into court and they're already penalizing you, right? And they don't tell you that you have ways to fight that. The last one here we're going to go over is a U.S. citizen, a citizen of the federal corporation, upon leaving the District of Columbia, becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident and does not have the common law right to travel as a citizen of one of the several states. So everybody out there that's walking around saying, I got the right to travel, you really don't. However, there are still ways that you can defend yourself in the system if you want to stay there. Not everybody's going to do this because it does change your life. It does change things the way you do things, and you have to learn how to do that. And so we're in the process here. We're trying to go and explain to you how all this stuff occurs and then what you can do about it. You may never do this, but I'll tell you, once you understand this thoroughly, it's going to give you a completely different view and give you some sanity about why things seem to be so crazy and what's really going on. So we're done with that. We're done with that page for now. Now what we're going to do is we're going to go down to one called How to Escape the Matrix, that is repatriate. That's the form we're going to use. And this is an outline of Roger Sales' process and how he explains the whole system. The other documents that we have here are supportive documents that go into some special things that we'll talk about. So how did we get in here? If you notice on this form down here about midway, it says the two questions. Two questions. Have you been asked the two important questions? This is, you've been asked these questions all your life. Are you a citizen of the United States? I always wondered all of my life why every time I filled out a form, they were asking me the same damn question over and over again. How many times did I have to fill out the thing and say I'm a citizen of the United States? And then they always ask you if you're a resident. What are they really asking you? If you are a citizen of the United States, are you related to Negro slaves who were assigned federal citizenship with civil rights following the Civil War? That's what they're asking you. That's what the question was for. Would you answer that question yes, when that's really what they're asking you? They don't explain why they're asking you those questions. They just ask them. Number two, are you a resident? Are you residing in a state requesting protection from the federal government against any actions of your state? Now, in our case, that's actually going to be true once you change your status, because we're going to be wanting the state head of state, attorney general, to protect us from this civil overlay that we're having to deal with every day. But again, the whole idea here was that, let's say a bunch of freed slaves had moved over to Kansas or someplace like that, and a bunch of people were giving them a hard time. They could appeal to the federal government for protection against those people in that state. That's what it was for. And there were cases that had to be taken care of, for sure. So how did they start doing that to us? Well, what they started doing was the benefits. They would talk to you about, we can provide you with this and that. Are you a citizen of the United States? Oh, yeah. Are you resident? Yeah. And they think that you're asking, do you live here? Whenever somebody asks you if you're a resident, it's not, hey, that's my house. That's over there. You know, it looks doggone pretty, doesn't it? I just painted it. That's not what they're asking you. When you're a resident, what jurisdiction of law are you placing yourself under? Now, in the case, in the class, Roger gets into talking about ambassadorial law, which is where all this stuff comes from. But the point is they want everybody to be a resident. Every state, every country wants you to be a resident. And as Roger says, that's the key to the New World Order. Everybody has to have a birth certificate, and everybody has to have that. Prior to the 1933, you didn't have to have a birth certificate. How did we pass on history? Typically, it was done through the Bible. You'd record it in the Bible, and it should be passed down the family lines. So now the next thing, once we get to that, it says, you look at the 13th Amendment, and we're going to talk about voluntary servitude is legal by omission. By answering yes to those questions, you have given the federal government your consent. One element absolutely required for the takeover and control of the United States, not the United States of America. We've always been told that the government has to do whatever it's doing by the consent of the governed, correct? Well, guess who gave them consent? Are you a citizen of the United States, and are you a resident? You gave them your consent. The thing is that you've been conditioned to do that all your life, and so now it's just kind of automatic. And that's how they control you. But what gives them the power to do that? We're going to get into that in a few minutes. It goes on and he talks about the fact that these people are slavers and that they hide behind the concept of American Samoa. Anybody ever hear of American Samoa? I had not until I met Roger. I thought Samoa was one big country and whole thing. I did not realize that it was the only territorial part of the United States system that was not incorporated. And the other thing he gets down here talking about, what we get into, is why has nobody been asking you about this dual political status? They didn't really want you to know. So before we get into the feudal system and stuff, we'll set this aside for the moment. We're going to go to the form called Certificates of Non-Citizen Nationality. It's got a red underline under the non-citizen at the top. So when you go down here through it and you look at the first, by the way, this is a State Department policy statement. It's at on the bottom of these documents, always at the bottom, there is a link to wherever this page came from. So you don't have to take a lot of notes on this stuff because we've already put that there for you. But this policy statement says, and this is where we started getting some really good understanding. It says in the third paragraph, as defined by the Immigration and Naturalization Act, all U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals. And then what they try to do is they try to tell you that you can't be a national. Only American Samoans can be non-citizen nationals. Everybody kind of gets confused because if you're a non-citizen national, that kind of sounds like what a national is. But that's a specific term only for American Samoans. And the reason is because they're in the unincorporated status. They are part of the United States system, but when they come to the United States, in their passport, it says this person is not a United States citizen. They have to naturalize in order to become a U.S. citizen and then can convert to the status of a national. Seems odd. But as you go through this thing, a lot of this stuff down here, at the rest of it, you start reading that and it begins to confuse you because you're trying to figure out, well, here's the national, this is a non-citizen national, isn't that the same thing? Well, no, it isn't. And they're trying to tell you that you can't be a national because you're not an American Samoan. This is what they did. They tell you the truth. All U.S. citizens are nationals. That's the dual political status that you have. But then they go on to confuse you here and don't specify that there is something called a national and a non-citizen national. They're different. So what they do is they do give you definitions. And if you go down there at the bottom, the very bottom of the page, it says Section 101A21. The Act says the term national means a person owing permanent allegiance to a state. Now, I want you to notice that the term state is not capitalized. It's a small s state. So if you flip it over and you go on the back, and then we go under Section 101A36, the term state, in quotes, capitalized, includes the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Virgin Islands of the United States. You see the difference there? Small s state is the original state. So California state would be the small s state. State of California would be the capitalized state. Now, the rest of this stuff, it keeps going on and talking about the American Samoans, which you just ignore. Here is how easy it is to get out of this system. The very bottom, highlighted in yellow, is all you have to do in order to get out of this system. I, being duly sworn, hereby declare my intention to be a national, notice lowercase national, but not a citizen of the United States. That's all you got to do. Why? Because they've got us in a feudal system. And if you're in the feudal system, we're going to have to go through, and I'm going to have Roger talk about a couple things here. I'm going to play Roger's explanation of the feudal system and also how the birth certificate actually gets involved, because there's a lot of misunderstanding about what really happens. You hear constantly that the mom signed off the birth certificate and that gave you to the federal government. That is not the case. It does deal with the birth certificate, but it deals with the feudal system more so than that. And at this point, I'll start playing some of the audio here that Roger did so that you'll get to hear his explanation of that before we continue to go on any further.
Okay. So the 14th Amendment does not say you are subject to, it says and. That denotes a choice, doesn't it? If there's some that are and subject, are there some not that are and not subject? Okay. They pass the 14th Amendment. It reads, "All this is the first clause, 14th Amendment's long. Everything we do is on the first clause of the 14th Amendment."
This is Deanna, and our guest is Roger Sales, and I was kind of multitasking, going through the document as you were talking. I have it on my website and am in the process of uploading it. I have it all nicely formatted, and it's ready to go. And I'm just finishing up, putting it up.
Well, we're going to go back to where kind of this started, okay? And we were at the, before the break, we were at the fall of the Roman Empire.
Right.
By the way, Edward Gibbons wrote that great book, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire.
I have that book. Mm-hmm.
And there's a statement he makes in there that I think you'll find particularly interesting. He said, "The first engine of tyranny is a corrupt judiciary."
Right.
Okay. So let's go back to the downfall of Rome in this situation where the cities in the empire were being attacked and the roads that connected them were cut off. Therefore, the Goths could surround the cities and force them to do whatever they want to siege, right? Well, people would get out. All right, and all they could do is run out in the countryside. Most of the land was owned by Roman generals. And they would go to the landowner and say, can you please give us some shelter? And he'd go, yeah, I can, but you got to promise me that you'll help me defend me against these guys if they come for me. There's your allegiance for protection, protection for allegiance. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, that developed, and it has 1,000 years of legal precedent. This isn't no shot in the dark, here one day, gone the next. Mm-hmm. 1,000 years of legal precedent here. That's 4 times longer than our country's been in existence.
Mm-hmm.
Perspective, okay? So it developed.
All righty. Okay. We are at the top of the hour. We'll be right back, and I'll have the document uploaded to the website when we get back. Be right back.
Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
By the way, this recording is available to you. It's available on Roger's website. We'll show you how to get access to that stuff so you can download a lot of this stuff. Interesting side note. My partner Kathy, working with me, heard me talking about this all the time and working with Roger, and she never really could understand what was going on. When Roger did this, I recorded it. This is my recording that I made. The document that says how to expose the matrix, I edited that along with a couple of other people. We wanted to tighten it up so we could get all the information on that page. At the end of that recording, I said to Kathy, I says, you know, Roger hit a home run here. I was amazed at the way he explained it through this radio show. She said, you know, that's the first time I understood what the hell he was talking about. So this recording is really very good to have in order to listen to it over a couple times so you can get a good flow of how all this stuff happened. Seriously, you know, I've been working with him for a long time, and it was just constant trying to re-educate. But this show right here really changed the way we were beginning to do things. And it was at that point when I decided to do the class, because I realized that Roger could teach us, and I could provide all the supporting documents and answer questions on the whole program. You can do the same. This thing gets replicated by person to person, and that's what we want to do. Kind of like a virus. We want to just start everybody becoming aware and getting control of their personal information and spread it to other people. And everybody's entitled to get all this information for free. And I support classes for free. So let's go get them.
All right, we are back. Our guest is Roger Sales. The website is sovereigntosurf.com. I have uploaded the document. I went through and I corrected the punctuation here and there. Okay. I didn't change it. I just formatted it so that it flowed better.
Not my specialty. Punctuation and grammar are not my specialties.
I take pride in doing that. So
okay.
It's up, and I just posted it in the chat room.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're talking about the system that you've been born and lived in all your life and didn't know anything about. You think you're over there in another system under a constitutional document with its protections, and you ain't nothing but a feudal serf. Okay? And you don't have access to that document, even though they make it appear that you do.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
To pull off the scam. So let's go back to Rome and the feudal system, and this is what developed over 1,000 years. It was a recognized system in Europe. In fact, I'll show you, let me just give you a little peek under the cover here. In 1066, William the Conqueror came over by just a quirk of one arrow. If you don't know that story, it's incredible. Took over England and brought with him from Normandy in France the European common law, which included the feudal system, which had never been in England before. Up to that point, we had the Anglo-Saxon common law. After that, we have the English common law that includes feudalism. Okay? Very important to understand. So, as the system developed over the years, there were two types of villains. Now, if you and I encourage you to go to one of the law dictionaries and look at, when you look at this stuff yourself, it's your information. When I'm telling you on the radio, it's a guy on the radio telling me something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I call that making the information yours. All right? Because
mm-hmm.
you've looked at it and seen it. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to Black's Law Dictionary, it's spelled, it has an unusual spelling because it's French in origin, but we say it villain. It's spelled V-I-L-L-E-I-N and pronounced in that spelling, villain. Okay?
Right, that's different.
Now, the males were called villains and the females were called knaves. All right?
Yes.
And there were two types of villains in the feudal system. There was one that it was involuntary, that was like akin to the same condition as black slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And once you were in a involuntary position, there was only one way you could ever get out. And that's if you were a bastard. Because if you were a bastard, there was always a suspicion that you were sired by the lord of the manor. And that would get you out. It's the only way you could get out.
Now, I know a lot. I've known a lot of those in my lifetime.
Okay. So the other was called
a joke.
The other one was called a voluntary serf, because unlike the involuntary serf condition, a voluntary serf could volunteer in and out of the position at any time. Okay? Now, you can see the way they did this. You can go look it up. It's called an oath of fealty. Have you ever heard of that, Deanna? An oath of fealty.
Okay. You've got a piece of paper here that's called fealty at the top. This is just for your information. So the more you know about the feudal system, the better you're going to be able to understand the condition that they brought us into and how we got here. But that's essentially here is just for your information.
Okay, and there's if you want to see one, go to Monty Python's Holy Grail, and he's got one in that movie. Okay, now this was an oath of fealty, and it's a contract. Let's say, you know, the times are hard down in jolly old London, and you got a family to feed, and you want to go get a land where you can grow some vegetables and work and feed your family. That's the condition. So you go to the big manor, and you go to the lord, and you go, hey, I want to volunteer into servitude. I need to feed my family.
Right.
And he goes, okay. And so what they did was they would pull all the villains, the serfs, they're called serfs, because you're in servitude, all right. All the serfs would surround you and the lord of the manor, and you would have this ceremony called an oath of fealty. And the way that the ceremony was set and progressed is you would kneel on your knees and put your hands like you were praying above your head.
Wow.
The lord of the manor would put his hands over your hands, and you would give him an oath swearing all your body and all your worldly goods to the lord of the manor under this relationship, protection for allegiance, allegiance for protection. I'll give you protection and a plot of land when you grow your vegetables. By the way, I get 25%.
Wow.
Okay? But the rest of them is yours, all right? And should the adjacent feudal lord come and try and take our feud, you're going to come to the castle and help fight him. See the arrangement?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, there was some very interesting, that's a contract. There are witnesses, and you swore your body and your worldly goods. You came into that relationship voluntarily
right.
and told him you were his property.
Right.
Now, property is an interesting word. We have two definitions here. You see, this is how they're getting us overall on a big picture, Deanna, mm-hmm. is they get us conditioned to these words in a colloquial usage, and they use them against us in a highly technical legal usage, and they're flying 50,000 feet above us and laughing their fannies off at us.
Right.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. You were telling me when we spoke earlier that you had your driveway shoveled, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to take it for granted that you've got a car.
I do.
Okay, is that car your property?
I thought it was, but...
Do you own it? It doesn't have any car payments, right? You own it.
I own it.
Well, you think
but
you
I
own
But I have
it.
To pay a license every
yes,
year.
You think you own it, okay?
Right.
Now, legally, that's not correct. Colloquially, the way we use it, yeah. Okay, that's how we all understand it. Legally, property is a right in and to a thing. And the car is the thing, and the property is your right of ownership in and to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, big difference, all right?
Same for my house. I think I own it.
Same for you. Don't own anything, baby. You can't own anything because you are property.
Right.
Until you give them that sentence or some other form to rebut the presumption that you are, you remain property. That's why you're using paper money, because you can't pay debts. Free people can own things, and they pay debts with hard money, gold, silver, whatever, right? And then they've got the property because they own the ownership right. In our society, we have to use paper money that's debt money to discharge our debts, because your property... And property can't own property.
Wow.
Are you starting to get it?
Yes.
Okay. So
how
the
disturbing. I knew bits and parts of this, that the minute you miss paying your taxes on your house, they can come in and take it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you don't own it.
Right.
You don't have a loyal title to your land. You can get it. You can
right.
get it each day. Okay? But that's another story. Let's continue down our feudal
right.
explanation here. So the feud, the guy was now, by the way, if you go to the Black's Law Dictionary, there's several different types of villains. They'll give you an overall, and then they go into some categories. I think about the first one down in Black's is called a villain in gross. There's another one called a villain regardant, and different aspects of that contract. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But if you look at villain in gross and Black's, it says a villain attached to the land property
mm-hmm.
and transferable by deed. How about we rephrase it? A citizen of the United States subject to the jurisdiction thereof as property and transferable by their birth certificate.
Right, right. And Social Security number is associated.
No.
With that.
Social Security number has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Okay. The birth certificate does. All right. Now I'm going to go back to the feudal system and show you why. In that system, you volunteered into being property, right? So if you and the wife got a little amorous one night and you produced a new serf, what condition was that serf born into?
Servitude.
Same exact condition.
Right.
Because his parents were property in that condition, and if they had a child, that child was born into the same condition, right?
Right.
So he could volunteer out even if his great-great-great-grandfather was the one that volunteered into servitude, and five generations later he decided he wanted to leave, he was out.
Wow.
Okay? Now you got to do it a specific way. You don't go to the other serfs and go, hey, listen, when you see the Lord and he comes around, tell him I'm out of here.
Yeah, right.
It didn't work that way. Okay? You had to go to the Lord. Why? Because he's the one you made the contract with.
Sure.
And say, hey, man, I'm out of here. And he goes, all right, well, come back to see us if you get a chance. Now, there's one consideration. If you had, and I don't want to get too complex, but there are some exceptions to some of these things. The exception here was if you went to volunteer out of servitude and he had given you 10 silver shillings when you came in, you had to give him the 10 silver shillings back. That's called consideration contract.
Okay.
But that's the feudal system. It has 1,000 years. 1,000 years of legal precedent, and that's the system you were born into. Now let me take it back. When I said those first three words, all persons born run the world, because that's where the presumption is. Okay? So now you're presumed, and I can explain, because we've had one of our guys research it at the hospital level. I got the whole scam, okay? But all persons born, the presumption of law, is a presumption of law based on another fact. This is how they're doing it, twice removed. Okay? The presumption is at birth, since everybody was put into this condition on March the 9th of 1933 with the bankruptcy.
Right. Yes.
That's when the system changed. How do we know the system changed that day? Because they took the gold and they issued the new fiat paper and made an outlawed gold. Why would they outlaw gold? Because everybody is in servitude in this new position. You're property of the federal government. You can't own property. Therefore, you can't pay debts with real money. You can only discharge them.
Wow.
I told you it was complex, and that's why nobody's ever figured it out. And if I wouldn't have had John Benson as my teacher, I'd have never figured it out either.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way that you're explaining it, which is beautiful, and if any of my listeners recognize these things that have happened with the FDR situation in 1933, with several, and I thought about the Irish and how Britain went in and just stole all their food in 1845 through 48, 49.
Yeah, but you're foretelling the future. You're foretelling the U.S.'s future right now.
Yes.
You read the tea leaves, girl.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, anyway, that's the system you're in, and I invite people to go back and familiarize yourself with it, because I guarantee you, if you ask most of the listeners here, what do you know about the feudal system? They'd go blank for a minute and say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And yet it's the system you've been born into and that you've agreed to, because you've been the one giving them your consent when they ask you the loaded questions.
Right.
Okay? So, let me give you what happens. This is where the fraud happens. I've got a very good student. He's been with me about 8 years. He was a four-year scholarship football player at the University of Texas. He's fearless. Okay? He stumbled on me on Joyce and automatically just started confronting the system. And he filed his affidavit first, and you can file it with or without a passport application. I advise you to do it with a passport application if you can afford it, and we're going to go over that before we end today, okay?
Okay.
And because now your new status is linked to your new passport.
Ah!
Okay? So now you got the highest form of government ID, and it correctly identifies you, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look any different. There's not going to be any nomenclature on there that you'd recognize that identifies it. You got to keep in mind, look at the depths we're talking about that they've gone to set this up and hide this that we're exposing today. Okay? So think, why did they do that? Well, for one thing, because they didn't want anybody to figure it out. And two, because it's so damned easy to get out of. And they know it. We don't, or didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We do now. So let's see, where was I going to go here? Well, we might as well. We do cover. Were there any questions on the feudal system that you had, Deanna?
No.
Okay, well then let's go back to what I was saying, all persons born, and I'm going to take you to the hospital fraud. Okay? all persons born, the first three words of the 14th Amendment, were intended to rule the world when they caused the Civil War to get these amendments in, and they do run the world 100 years later.
Right.
Okay. Now, why are those three words so critically important? Because the feudal system is the only system, legal system in the history of the world where your political status was assigned at your birth. Otherwise, you follow your parents' hereditament, their bloodlines. There's two different types of determining status. This is one, that's the other. That's why some of your, let me clear my throat here, I'm going to mute for just a second. That's why if your grandparents or great-grandparents were Polish, Italian, Spanish, some of the other countries over there in Europe, that you can go back and get one of those passports. Because those countries are on that blood system. Okay? So there's your two different types. The only place of any legal system assigns political status at birth is the feudal system. So those three words, if you know that, and it says all persons born, well hell, that's the feudal system. Because that's the only place right. that political status was assigned at birth. Okay? Now let's go into how they're doing it. My student named Brian, he's on with us all the time on my show, by the way. We'll plug my show. I'll tell you about it for Wind. And Brian... he's just fearless. He'll do a lot of stuff I wouldn't do back in the old days, okay? He just gets right in their face. Now he's really empowered, because that's what this information does. It re-empowers you with all the power that God meant you to have that was stolen at your birth. Okay? And so it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight, but you're going to get to a point if you delve into the information, you make it yours. And what happens, Deanna, is this. You start to change the way you think. And you can't change the way you think without the way manifesting the way you act. Okay?
Now, what kind of jeopardy do you place yourself in? You
absolutely, absolutely none. I would say this. When they don't recognize this, we all know what time it is.
But I'm talking about your personal...
Oh, personally for me? Mm-hmm. There's two sticky wickets here that people have come up consistently. One's IRS. We've got that handled. The other's a driver's license because you've got to tell them you're a resident. Mm-hmm. And that's the term that ties you back into the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
The state in which they reside. Mm-hmm. So when you answer that question, are you a resident, you think it means I live over there. See my house, and I just painted mm-hmm. it. Ain't pretty, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that ain't what they're asking you. That is a highly technical legal term from a body of law called ambassadorial law, where countries go into treaties and exchange ambassadors. Okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say you're in a... I'm in Ecuador. Let's say the Ecuadorian ambassador gets caught out there at, what's the big airport in D.C.? Whichever one. You're flying into D.C. I forgot. You're flying into D.C. and he gets caught with a kilo of cocaine in his diplomatic pouch.
Right.
What do they do?
Oh, well, they let him off.
No, they send him back to Ecuador because he's in residency, and that means the laws of Ecuador apply to him, not the laws of the United States. So when you tell them you're a resident of a state, you're telling them that the 14th Amendment and federal law apply. You're residing in a state asking protection from the federal government against your state, like the blacks were in certain states after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a highly technical term. It doesn't mean where you live. It means what legal system are you under. You can prove this. Go to Webster's Collegiate Dictionary and look under the word resident. You're going to see two definitions. They're almost the exact same thing. The first one says the act or fact of living or dwelling in a place for some time.
Mm-hmm.
The second one says the act or fact of living or dwelling in a place for some time for the receipt of a benefit or the discharge of a duty. That's legal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to get back to Brian, and Brian goes into the hospital. He's got two daughters. I'm sure they're lovely. They're, I don't know, 8, 9 years old, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes in with his daughters in tow, no less, in flip-flops and shorts. And he goes up to the administrative office and he said, listen, I'm building a folder for my daughters here that were born at this hospital in case they ever need it in later life and all in any important documents and stuff. And so he starts quizzing the lady. Well, she finally goes off and she brings back a piece of paper called a verification of facts. And that's what's produced when the baby is born. Immediately after the child is born, they have this document called a verification of facts. And it's got the height, the weight, the ear color, eye color, maybe footprints, handprints, whatever. It's got all that on it. And then down at the bottom, there's a place for the mother and the father to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what's never signed? The verification of facts. When that document's produced, and we got this, he finally bugged the lady on the third floor so much that she said, listen, I'm going to send you down to where this happened. So he goes down the basement.
Mm-hmm.
The lady comes up, and he says, this is what I'm looking for. And she goes, she said, okay, wait a second. And she goes off for about 10 minutes. And she comes back, and the very first words out of her mouth are, you're not going to use anything I tell you against us, are you?
Oh, my gosh.
No, no, heavens, I'd never do anything like that. I'm just building this folder for my daughters in case they need it in later life. That's the first thing she said. Okay, here's the process that he has investigated and got all of the proof. This is what happens. The verification of facts representing the child without the parent's signature on it is taken over to a computer. Oh, just hold on. Strap yourself in, kid.
Mm-hmm.
Is taken over to a computer terminal that's installed in every hospital in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, all it has is capital letters, evidently. And they type in all the vital statistics in a real old DOS-type program. It's nothing fancy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when it's finished, that information is transferred to the Bureau of Vital Statistics. And the Bureau of Vital Statistics prints the birth certificate. Are you ready for this, Deanna? And then they put it in a bank safe that's guarded by armed guards 24 hours a day, 7 days.
Oh, my gosh.
Why would that be?
Because you're a value to the state for...
Your future labor.
Right. Right.
Is being securitized and collateralized.
Right.
The birth certificate acts, again, in this equivocation thing.
Mm-hmm.
Your birth certificate forms two functions. One, it identifies all the birth information.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you notice it always goes to the Department of Commerce?
Wow, yes, yes.
And now... You're securitized and collateralized.
Right.
Well, John always speculated, and I've come to the conclusion many years ago he's correct, is that is a specific type of a commercial document because we're in commercial law under the UCC.
Right.
Okay? And that is a specific commercial document that is called a warehouse receipt. You can go look it up in a search engine.
Gosh.
Read it. Okay? The birth certificate doubles and is being used in that other capacity as a warehouse receipt. Now, warehouse receipts have very interesting qualities legally. One is that the good that the receipt represents, the good now takes on a shadowy existence and becomes the paper. Are you getting me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why it's put into a safe with armed guards.
Right.
Because if you have the paper, you've got constructive possession of the good.
Right. And why has no one brought this forward? Why? I presume that these people that are in these positions of controlling this collateral and the paperwork and everything... They get paid to do it.
I've lost the trail right there. I can't tell you any more than that on the specifics of how it's done or whatever else, but I'll take you to that point. Maybe if we ever can take over and we can get in the bowels of the Treasury Department, we can find out.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm going to go back to something I said earlier. I'm going to show you how they use this. They then attach you through this mechanism. What did the definition say? Transferable by deed?
Mm-hmm.
Would a warehouse receipt qualify as a deed?
Yes.
If they've got possession, if the paper's the good, then the whoever owns the paper can transfer it, and that fulfills that definition of a villain in gross, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, they take your birth certificate, implying your future labor, because your property now,
mm-hmm.
your parents didn't sign the verification of facts. In fact, your parents had admitted all their life that they were serfs, too. So when
right.
they have a child, the automatic logical conclusion is that's a serf, too. That's
sure.
why they don't sign the paper. And in a silent contract in the from the feudal system, the oath of fealty that runs silent generationally. Can you see why our enemies like this little system?
Sure.
Okay. So now they take your birth certificate over and they attach it to an instrument called the United States Bond. And they sell them on the open market. 6 month, 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, 30 year, they're talking about 50 and 100 year now. And some foreigner gives them that money and buys that bond, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how does the bondholder get paid? Through your income tax.
Ah!
Okay,
ah.
Now I'm going to mention a phrase to you here, Deanna. I've heard everybody from Ron Paul to economists to people I really respect say it, and they don't know what they're talking about. They make money out of thin air.
Oh, they don't. They make money by sell. They were in bondage.
They've securitized yes. your future labor
right.
to pay bondholders. That's
right.
When the Federal Reserve goes into a Federal Open Market Committee and comes out and say, we need $1 billion circulating in the economy. So
right.
they call the Treasury, and the Treasury prints up $1 billion worth of bills, Federal Reserve notes, doesn't matter what the denomination is, and to go with it, they pin up $1 billion worth of bonds. And mm-hmm. both of them are delivered to the Federal Reserve. Because the bonds are the true faith and credit of the United States. That's who they're talking about. You think it's the dollar. It's the bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And the bondholders, that promise is to the bondholders that they're going to get their coupon payments every time they're due. Because they're going to take it right out of your rear end and give it to them. See anything new here so far in a little over an hour, Deanna?
Yeah. It's really putting the pieces together. Wow.
Okay. So that action and the fact that on March the 9th of 33, the whole country was put into this system, would you consider that to be a fraud?
It was certainly a great big huge deception.
Okay. Well, it is a fraud. And the color of law that you're a voluntary serf in the feudal system is absolutely ridiculous. And that's why they recognize that one sentence when you send it to the right guy.
Wow.
Okay, here's two things. Go way back. Let's go in the way back machine to the Declaration of Independence. There's 11 offenses listed in that document against the king. You remember those? I'm going to quote a couple to you.
Go ahead.
The first one is, he has erected multitudes of offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass us and
Whoa.
Eat our substance.
Yes.
We'll cover the other one when we get back.
Yes, we'll be right back.
Good. Maybe we can make it two. Yeah, I keep moving away. Well, the sun was really in my eyes. It was kind of tough. All right, so this is covered on how to escape the matrix, this outline. Here in the top, it talks about the 13th and 14th Amendments and the wording. And then on the back, it covers the concept of the feudal system. back here. So this is basically an outline. And now I'm just going to go into some of the other papers that I was handing out to you guys. There's a lot more to get into, but you know, if you want to hear more, we can get the whole recording for you, and you can get. You really need to dig into this stuff a little bit. This is just a quick overview of where we're at, so you understand how we got here, and the status that you're actually in. So there's another document here called Citizenship of the United States, and that document talks about the two statuses. And we want as much information out here as possible to show people that you actually do have two statuses and that you can do something about this situation that we find ourselves in. So right there in the middle of the page, highlighted in yellow, it says there are two primary sources of citizenship. Birthright citizenship, which is what he was talking about. And it goes on to talk about all persons born or naturalized in the United States are subject to the jurisdiction thereof. They are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside, which is the exact wording that you're going to read over here when we talk about the 14th Amendment. Now, I'm tying back the information that we're talking about here to all of those court cases where they make a distinction between the different citizen statuses and who has access to the Bill of Rights and who has privileges and immunities. And it's connected through the feudal system and the way they set that up. Is that clear to everybody? I hope so. If not, you can go back over it because you're going to have the recordings to do that. But anyway, Citizenship of the United States, it just talks about the two citizenships in a little more detail, so you can go through that. Now, the other thing when we're talking about the Internal Revenue Service, there's one here called the Legal Information Institute paperwork, and this one's talking about income tax. The thing that you need to understand is that when we talk about being a national, what the government does is it changes the terms that they use depending upon whatever code section you're reading. And it's one of the things that you have to do is you always have to check the definitions and see what these certain terms mean for that particular document because they switch on them. You can't just read something and assume that the words they're using in one area means the same thing that you saw in another document. So this brings it out. And right there at the very top, section 1.1-1, income tax on individuals. Everybody wants to get rid of the income tax. So it says right there, the section 1 of the code imposes an income tax on the income of every individual who is a citizen or resident of the United States. Where have you heard those terms before? To the extent provided by Section 871B and 877B on the income of a non-resident alien. There's your national. He's now known as a non-resident alien. So, if you didn't know that there's only two statuses, you're either free or you're a slave. So when they go to the different sections of the code, they apply the term for national is a different phrase or a different word. Because when you read Section 519 of the documents, when you're getting your explanation on who has to pay taxes, they're talking about non-citizen nationals, and everybody thinks that we're talking about a national. Now, the code sections that you're only required to cover, 871B and 877B, are things that you're never going to come in contact with. So they've made this thing constitutional, and they've done that because the jurisdictional statement for Title 26 is citizens and residents. They put both statuses in there to make it constitutional. And this is deemed constitutional. Out of the 50 codes, Title 26 is income tax. Out of all the other 50 codes, 49 of them, the jurisdictional status is resident only. Remember, we're talking about every state, every country wants you to be a resident. And the laws here in California apply to citizens and residents. Well, if you get an illegal alien in here and you give him a card that says he's a legal resident, is he subject to the codes? Yes. But you as a national are not. So that's just, I wanted to give you that thing, distinction there, to show you an example of how they kind of confuse you by changing the name of what they refer to you as. Roger gets into some of the other terms that they use. The next page here is an affidavit of citizenship evidence. And this is what they call, when you send in an affidavit, this is evidence. That's what the State Department calls it. And that's what you want to refer to it as. Now, the one sentence that was under the area where they talked about the Samoans just says, I declare I want to be a national and not a citizen of the United States. Well, this one here reads, I being duly sworn under the penalty of perjury of the laws of the United States of America, that's the second jurat in the code, that phrase, hereby declare my intention and desire to be a national with God-given constitutionally protected rights and not, quote, a citizen of the United States, in a condition of voluntary servitude with civil rights under the scope and purview of the 14th Amendment. As a national, I am non-resident to the residency and alien to the condition of voluntary servitude of the 14th Amendment. National status is deceptively identified at 26 CFR 1.1-1, which is the document we just talked about, as a non-resident alien. So that explains exactly how they're using that term. As a national, I am non-resident to the residency of the 14th Amendment and alien to the condition of voluntary servitude. That understanding is very important to pick up because you're going to be dealing with that issue, because you don't have to pay income taxes anymore. And you can also file what we call a revocation of election and possibly get some potential funds that you filed back for. Another thing I want to bring up to you is how to claim and protect your things that you do and get your documents, everything under the common law. This one is how to claim and protect your Bill of Rights when signing anything. Then they come back the other way. You'll be back. So what it is, it gives you an example here, and I want you to buy a book. And the book is on Amazon, and it's called Without Prejudice. And it's 1-207. It's an older book. They changed the Without Prejudice portion of the UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, from 1-207 to 1-308. But the book still says Without Prejudice, 1-207. Now, there are other books there that talk about the UCC and the Without Prejudice factor, but you want the one specifically that has the 1-207 on it. It's a very good explanation. And it shows you here what I do all the time is whenever I sign my name, this is called conditioning your signature. When you sign something, a document, they can presumptively decide what you've signed and agreed to, even though it's not explicit on the form. It's very good to understand what this means, and when you get the book, you're going to understand a lot more. It's not very expensive, but this is worth its weight in gold to be able to condition your signature, especially if you're not going to change your status. That's the one way you can help yourself. The other documents that I have here for you, this is getting kind of long. There's another one here. It's a trifold document that you can use. And it has some good information on there, too. A little bit out of date on the back side. But it's something you can just reprint yourself if you want, and you can fold it over and pass it out to people if you want to get them interested in the process. Now, the last document here is the one where we have, it says Tom Hyland in red. His name is in red here at the top. And I'm going to read it into the system so it'll be on the tape. And why don't you look at this document and we'll go through it together as I read it, okay? It's got his name in red, Tom Hyland, okay? Now, this is a conversation which I ran into doing research And it explains the situation in these paragraphs here. At the very top is the link. If you want to look at the whole conversation, you can go to the link at the top of the page. But I used to read this at the beginning of classes, but nobody really understood it. Now, since we've gone through all this stuff, is it really that bad, Charles? You're yawning. Okay. I'm going to read it as a summary of what we try to get across to people. So just to make sure everybody's clear. Now, I don't know who Ciccolini is. I think there's a character out there called Ciccolini, but technically, Ciccolini, we are all Negroes. Originally, when America began, there were state citizens and there were slaves. You were a citizen of your state. Your rights were protected by the Constitution and Bill of Rights, and the government dwelled within a 10-mile square space called Washington, D.C. We, the people, held the government on a tight leash. Now, the government holds us on a leash. In the beginning, there was only one citizenship, the state citizen. In 1868, Congress approved the 14th Amendment, which created the U.S. citizen. All of the freed black people were wandering about with no official status of citizenship, and the powers that be were not going to allow these Negroes to become equal in rights and stature. The U.S. citizen is a citizen of the corporation U.S. Inc., declared bankrupt since March 9, 1933, and a resident of the federal zone of New York or Virginia or Pennsylvania or whatever. That domicile exists only on paper, and it is a bankrupt note. 14th Amendment citizen is not privy to God-given rights, defined but not limited to those described within the Constitution, but is only afforded strictly defined privileges that can be changed or denied by the stroke of a pen wielded by federal judges and administrators such as governors and mayors. The reckless and dangerous nature of having two categories of American citizenship was expressed in dissension by Supreme Court Justice Harlan in Downs v. Bidwill, 182 U.S. 244, 1901. Justice Harlan wrote, "The idea prevails with some that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all its restrictions, and the other to be maintained by Congress outside and independent of that instrument. If the principles thus announced should ever receive the sanction of a majority of this court, a radical and mischievous change in our system will result. We will, in that event, pass from the era of constitutional liberty, guarded and protected by a written constitution, into an era of legislative absolutism. It will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of a government outside the supreme law of the land finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority and prevent all violation of the principles of the Constitution." In spite of this grave warning of Justice Harlan, the ill-conceived 14th Amendment and its creation of a second-class citizen, unworthy and disallowed of unalienable God-given rights protected by our Constitution, is a virus that has spread until now almost every American has been enveloped by diseased, permanently cast down to the level of a recently freed slave. We are all down on the plantation picking cotton. Get it? This is why you are threatened with contempt of court when you mention the Constitution, because it does not apply to the U.S. citizen, and every judge knows that. Or if they don't know it, they are simply operating by rote behavior within the confines of the administrative tribunal, which our courts have been reduced to, and they know the drill. Say Constitution one more time and they'll throw your ass in jail. If you, Ciccolini, or anyone else here finds this interesting, I'll reply with a bit more information. Life doesn't have to be this way. It is gross ignorance that causes people to be enslaved by their public servants. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the short presentation of why you might want to consider to be a national.
Thank you, John, very much for that. And I just wanted to add on to what John just said. One of the interesting things about Edward Bedalian's case is the judge, one of the first things the judge did was say he cannot bring in any arguments about the First Amendment. He cannot argue that he was exercising his free speech because he's a serf and he doesn't realize it. So if anybody has any questions for John, please come up to the microphone here so we can get them on the tape and give John a chance to answer. And try to make your questions brief, please. But come over here where I'm at and ask your question from here. Who's first? Come on up to the mic, okay, please. This is all going to be on our video. So
okay. Go ahead. And if I have more than one question, should I do one at a time, get back in line?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is related, you know, maybe.
Okay, yeah. I have actually three questions. Okay, so when I have shared this information as best I could with other people, considering what's going on now with the January 6th, you know, defendants being arrested and thrown in prison when they were present there, most of them did nothing wrong, and seeing how there's a two-tiered justice system between liberals and conservatives, and most of the people respond, well, even if all of this information is true and accurate, it appears that we are living in a police state and they're doing whatever they want anyway. So even if they found out that I was a national and showed them the affidavit, since they're doing what they want to anyway, they're just going to continue to do that. So I'd like to know if this is true.
If what's true?
If even after somebody becomes a national, if the police state can still do whatever they want to you, whether you're a national or you're not.
That's what Roger means when he says, if they don't accept this, we know what time it is. The people always have the power of revolution. It's the bottom line. It depends on the people. But when I was listening to Peter Nice and Joyce Rosenblum, they talked about condition precedent. In other words, the way the system works is whenever you get a letter from the government, that's the government offer. You have to view these things as an offer because, remember, everything is under the Uniform Commercial Code. Okay? So you have to respond to that offer. So what you do is we flip it. We used to think that we would just go to the agencies and deal with the agencies, but it's been shown and proven that what we have to do is we have to go to the lord of the manor and volunteer out. It's a question of jurisdiction. If we have removed ourselves from their jurisdiction and we have noticed them, because that's what due process is, it's notice and the right to be heard. Once we have changed our status, they are acting outside of their authority, and you now can go personally at that officer. You see, under the system the way it is, when an officer's bothering you, he's got implied immunity because you didn't notice him, that he's dealing with somebody he shouldn't be dealing with. So it should work in most cases, and there are all kinds of things that we've seen already where it does work. If you're listening to the show, and this is one of the things I didn't bring up, I want to do it right now. Thank you for the question. On the back, I'll get there. On the back of the document, it says how to escape the matrix. Down at the very bottom on the back, it says current show information, thematrixdocs.com. Thematrixdocs.com. The support group is Roger's show 6 days a week. Go and start learning. There's a lot of stuff on that site. More documents, all kinds of things that you're going to be able to. I'm going to be sending you out a couple books, maybe three different books, and a guide, complete guide with court cases where you can follow this through. Some of the things that we've already seen, there were people, I believe, over in Colorado where they were trying to take their kids from them. And then once they had the affidavit in front of them, that stopped it. There are people that have been stopped by cars, and one of the persons in San Diego The officer came back and says, I've never seen a DNR, you know, do not detain. That's what it was, a DNT. Anyway, different things like that. So it happens all the time because the people properly noticed. Now, how do you do that? You have to file the affidavit volunteering out because your status is voluntary. That's the point. We're not involuntary slaves. We have volunteered in because our parents kind of volunteered us in, right? Because they got sucked in, you know. And if you're going after the benefits, and this is how they bring you in, they make you dependent on the state for your income. So you got Social Security and you got pensions, which they control all the money, right? You got a problem there. And then you have families that are down on their luck, so they get federal assistance, right? And now they're giving federal assistance to all of these illegal aliens that they're burying us with. You have to step out, and we have to have the people start stepping out, because now once we step out, we're no longer collateralized for their money. And we have absolute rights, political rights, where we have constitutional protections. The courts do honor those things. But remember, most of the time people are dealing with administrative level stuff, the agencies that you're dealing with. Those are the guys that we have problems with. They say, well, I'm not going to accept that. Okay, so take the ruling. They didn't accept it. So what you have to do then is go on and exhaust your administrative remedies. You ask them, well, what's my next step to go after the administrative remedy? How do I appeal this? So you follow the process. If you use the process, you're going to prevail. If you have to get into federal level judges and stuff, they're going to have to follow and obey it because it's still law. Now, if they declare war and all of a sudden everything is gone and they declare martial law, it's all bets are off.
Even as a national,
if all of a sudden they purposely put us in a war, which they're trying to do, and they destroy all means of commerce, and we don't have water, we don't have electricity, we don't have food and all this kind of stuff, and the government comes along with a whole bunch of government cheese and says, hey, you want some? And you accept it? You're not taking the system, but you have to take it, right? You don't have any choice. So you're going to have to follow their rules in order to do it. So that's where we're going. We still have time to solve this problem. But it's dependent on all of us spreading this message and getting multiple layers of people. And once we get enough people who are dealing with these local serf fiefdoms, we can actually take charge of this. The county can actually secede from the state. Mm-hmm. We get control of our county. That's where you have to do it. We have a lot of power. It's just you don't know it yet. And the more you work with it, the more you begin to understand that we actually have that.
Just one other response to something you just mentioned about all bets are off. So if they succeed in creating these 15 second cities or ghettos, and they don't, and you're a national, and they're telling you you can't travel more than 15 minutes from where you live, is that also a no bets are off, or can you say, I'm a national, you have no control over my traveling?
It's your decision to live in that city. They're going to create them, and a lot of people are going to like them. You don't. Go someplace else. This is a very big country. When you fly over it enough times, you get to see how empty it is. There's so much place, and there are people, states, giving you free property. They want you to come. So you still have power. Now, I like the fact that they call us a national, because I don't want to have to set myself up as a national of a particular state, because I was born in Ohio, so I'm an Ohioan, right? So if I was tied to that state, I am tied to that state as my place of birth, right? But because I only have to use the term national, I don't have to change all my paperwork to be in California or go over to Arizona and do whatever you want. But I'm not resident. I make my abode here. My residence is in heaven. Right? I only make my abode here, and I use the term abode. I use domicile or any of that stuff. If you'll notice Roger's own affidavit, if you look in his book in the back, he uses the term abode too. I didn't know that, but you got to research all of these definitions. You have to, there's no choice. You have to start learning about this stuff, and it's a never-ending thing because they don't teach us this stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey, John. So I just noticed that when you do a few things online and stuff, you know, sometimes you don't really have the option.
Right.
It'll say, are you a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident?
Right.
And there is no other checkbox, and there is no way through that software program. I'll give you an example.
Oh, I understand.
I'll give you an example. So, I mean, I'm starting an online business, and because of the compliant and all this and tax implications and, oh, show us, you know, give me your social security. And then the question will come, are you a citizen or a resident? And there's no other option. So what do you do in that situation?
Well, it depends on how you're setting yourself up. You're probably setting yourself up as a sole proprietor, right?
Yeah, but the software online, none of the software.
Well, what are you applying for?
What's it's like a software that perhaps you have a landing page, an extra phone number, it's email automation, stuff like that. So they're all going to be the same. They're all going to have two questions. Are you are you a citizen or a resident? So, I mean, what's right. the... Otherwise, you're just not... You can't go through. So what's the answer, man?
I would check the box off and then file an affidavit. Your affidavit will...
Okay, so get through it, and then later, what do?
You send them an affidavit.
In the mail?
Yeah, it's part of your application. Say you did not allow me to correct my proper status.
Okay, good deal. I've got some more questions, but just keep it flowing. I'm going to let others, and I'll come back around. Thank you.
Everybody gets questions on the I-9 and things like that, and there's answers for that too.
Hi, John. Good to have you here and do the class again. I heard a lot of stuff today I didn't hear the first time, so I must not have been paying attention. Good class. So I have been speaking to someone else who is teaching people to do the paperwork to change their status. And this person has advised me not to say that I am a national because there's a whole different set of rules and laws that are attached to being a national, as opposed to she's just putting her name in and describing that she's a female and she's the property of God or something like that. So,
so she's an inhabitant.
I don't know exactly how she's... Well,
they don't
it.
Want to be known as attached to any state.
She doesn't want to be, she does not any want government. To say, and she's advising not to say she's a national. And she also told me that unless I'm prepared to learn a lot of law, if I have to defend myself, not to do it.
Sounds like a presumption on her part.
I don't know. She's some, you know her, but I don't want to mention names because I...
Well, my opinion is I want to use the terms that this government understands. I don't want to come up with something that they don't understand, and you're really going to be put in a position of having to defend it and prove that the way you're doing it is correct.
Okay.
If they understand what a national is, and they change your status, and they say that it changes your requirements under the code, you're pretty much as free as you need to be, right?
Okay. And so this will also, becoming a national will also get you out of having to pay income tax. To the IRS.
Well, if you're not in the jurisdiction as a non-resident alien, you'd have to pay. But if you're in the status of a non-resident alien, it doesn't apply to you.
Okay.
You don't have to pay or getting out of anything. It just no longer applies to you, so you don't have to comply with it a U.S. citizen does.
Thank you.
Yeah. You never want to say you're getting out of anything.
Thank you for correcting that.
So, John, an interesting part of your talk was when you got into the IRS. I just wanted to make a comment. This I picked up through the film Freedom to Fascism, Aaron Russo's Freedom to Fascism. The term income, just so you know, legally speaking, income is corporate gains. So they're talking about your corporate gains because you're a corporation.
You're a person.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering if you could comment on that, and then one more quick thing.
Well, again, it doesn't apply to you anymore.
Right.
So it's superfluous. You don't have to worry about it.
Right. So if you're not in their trap, you don't have corporate gains, right?
The income tax has been deemed constitutional, as Drudger talks about. It's the way they fund the whole system, right?
Right.
Well, once you're outside of that, it just doesn't apply to you.
Right.
But they
so it doesn't
it
apply.
Look like it applies to you. And that's that section 519 and then in that booklet about who has to pay.
Right.
But again, they're talking about the different person.
Right.
See, they drop the thing around. They change the name to confuse you. But as long as you understand, there's only two statuses. One's free and one's slave.
Yeah. So another point, when you talked about when Roger said, when this no longer works, you know what time it is. So I just wanted to advise that that's what People's Rights is here for. That's what we're here to do, is help protect each other when they do violate your rights anyway. And I just want one little piece of advice to go out to everybody. Always film the police. Always film the police. Don't forget I said that. Always film the police.
Well, at least have a digital recorder on you so you can record them.
John, I've got a question about what agencies to send the statement of truth to.
You mean an affidavit?
The affidavit, yeah.
Okay, well, you're going to send it directly to the Federal Secretary of State because
Federal Secretary of State?
Right. He's the lord of the manor. How do we know that? Because he's the one that issues passports. He's the one that has to correctly identify you to foreign governments when you go. He has to know your exact status.
And it's my understanding there's other agencies that would be helpful to send them to, too, right?
Yeah, and if you get into the Matrix docs, and you go on there, and there's a whole list of things that we suggest. It's on that on the website.
Which website?
It's the Matrix docs. It's the one on the back of the How to Escape the Matrix paper.
On the back of How to Escape the Matrix? Okay.
The Matrix docs, D-O-C-S, .com.
The Matrix docs.
Go to that website, and there will be information about that.
Okay, cool. I've got some more questions, but I'll let some people come through. Thanks, John.
Okay.
Thank you, John. I've gotten confused because I went to a workshop with somebody else about becoming a U.S. national. And after I did that and I shared the information about that with other people, I had somebody tell me, that's not the thing to do. You should become a state national. Now, you just mentioned a few of the people. At the very beginning, you mentioned some of the people, like somebody named Strait and somebody Von Reitz or something. You know, there's different people.
Well, the people associated with all that, yeah.
And I've gotten spun around. I tried to look up the documents that you were talking about, and what I would really like is to be able to see in the federal documents somewhere that says being a U.S. national is the status that will reinstate our rights, but because it's been hidden, I end up feeling like I have to take everyone's word for it, that this person giving a presentation or that giving a presentation. I feel like, you know, you understand, I'm like, I don't, you know, I want to understand what I'm doing before, and because I saw the document that says that you're signing this affidavit, and it says I understand what I'm doing before I do it, and that's where I got stuck. I don't understand what I'm doing, even though the information is there. I don't know where it is in the law.
Here's the answer to the question.
Thank you. Can you talk a little louder too?
Well, I'm talking into the, okay.
Yeah, if you put it closer.
The answer is, use the terms that this government understands. If you go into LexisNexis or Westlaw and you search for state national as a term, you're never going to find it. You're only going to find the term national or U.S. national. That's it. That's what they use to refer to what you're doing.
A U.S. national and a national are the same thing.
If you look at the document that we gave you, it's the one... see, where is all this stuff? Oh, that's all the same document. Let's see.
It's this one here, right?
Yeah.
Could you go closer to this so they can record it for other people?
If you use the document, the certificates of citizen, non-citizen nationality, which there's a link on the back, it's travel.state.gov. This is the legal policy of the federal government in terms of what you use to call yourself a national. And it says right there, all U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals.
So I wasn't able to find that document online, so I should try again.
Well, there's the link right there.
At the very bottom of the first page on that. Or is that the second page? That's the back page?
It's the back page, yeah.
Okay, I'll take another look. If I have questions, I can get back to you.
Yeah, this is easy to find. Okay. I even carry it on my phone all the time to show people that there's two different statuses, and the federal government says so. It says so right there.
So when these people are talking about being a state national, what are they talking about? Because they're saying, well, you shouldn't be on this American Samoa. You don't really want to do that because you're now saying American Samoa, and you won't be able to, you won't be able to use the Second Amendment. You won't be able to vote. And I'm like spinning around here. I mean, based on what you're saying, I should be able to vote and buy whatever I want if I restore my status.
Again, they're putting a status there that is not in the code. Okay? You can call yourself a bunny rabbit if you want to.
People do, I guess.
I mean, people are going to wonder what you're talking about. If you want to communicate with this government, use the terms that they've set up for us. U.S. national, or just plain national. Okay? How do they say to get out of it? These are their words. I, being duly sworn, hereby declare my intention to be a national, lowercase, but not citizen of the United States. That's how they say they accept you getting out. It's that simple. That's okay. Why the affidavit that we drew was very clear, and it's only one, two sentences. That's all you need.
On a slightly different note, are they requiring you to take another passport photo, and do you have to do one with a retina or iris scan in order to do that now?
I'm not sure about the retina scan or any of that stuff. I'm military.
Huh?
I'm military. I'm retired military. And I'm retired securities representatives. I've been photographed, scanned, up one side and down the next. And I still went when I was traveling on the airplanes. I didn't want to go through all that stuff, so I went to clear and I had them scan my irises. So what?
Well, because that is another set of information that they're collecting about. Yeah, they're collecting about you. That was part of what I presented.
They have everything. Here's how they do it. They already know everything about you. And if you watch Dinesh D'Souza's current video called Police State, they talk about how they do it and communicate with you. They do what they call status of life. I think that's what they call it. And whenever they're looking into you, they've investigated you already. They've monitored you. They've photographed you. They look at all your records. They check your phone calls. They see who you associate with. They see what you do. They check your whole entire history. And then they approach you. They already know who you are. Everybody's trying to hide from them, but you can't. Not in this day and age. So, use their terms so there's unambiguous what you're doing. Just try to use other terms that they didn't come up with as part of their code, and they're going to question it. So, these guys, we've never had any problem. Roger has been doing this for years, and there just is no blowback when you use this method. Besides, you've got the Secretary of State telling you how to change your status. That's their words.
So if I wanted to vote or run for government office or whatever and I did this, I would still be qualified?
There's questions on voting. We're still working that out. There are people that have been able to change their status to an elector, not a voter. So what Roger's trying to do is get people to test the system by going down and telling people that, show them the affidavit and change your status and tell them, how do I participate? I'm here. You should be able to vote in local elections and things like that. But it definitely will change your status. For example, if you want to go to a junior college or something and pay the resident state, they probably won't let you do that. You'll probably have to pay an out-of-state fee in order to go to the junior college. Okay? Do it. That proves your status. Do all these things. It proves your status. And you can go ahead and even send in an information request and ask the Secretary of State, do you have proof that I'm a citizen of the United States? You can send it to the FBI. Do you have any proof that I'm a citizen of the United States? And they'll say, no, we don't have any proof. You can fully document what you're doing.
The other thing, I'm sorry, there's other people waiting.
It's okay.
Do you have, if you opt out of these being a citizen and a U.S. citizen, do you have to opt out of all government not aid or whatever, you know, the ways that the government gives people money, no matter what it is, whether it's Section 8 because you're a landlord, whether you're on food stamps, are people opting out of getting money from the government by doing this, or do they have to in order to reinforce their status and somehow by accepting the money that they've now buying into the system and then they've undercut themselves?
If you're going into the private, you don't get the benefits.
The private? What do you mean, going to the private?
Changing your status to national is going into the private.
So you wouldn't get any benefit. You wouldn't get any benefits of any services from the government at all.
You're going to get your Social Security benefits, your Medicare, and things like that. That's all. That's fine. It's no
If you have a tenant who's a Section 8, that's their benefits, and it's getting paid to the landlord as a recipient. Does that mean that you would opt out of that?
I haven't even begun to approach that. I don't know. This is where we start testing the system. You have to go on and do things and different things, but you're sucked into the system by accepting benefits. I would rather be free. You have to decide, and this is why some people won't do it. They want the benefits. They don't care. It doesn't matter.
That's why I was asking the question.
Yeah. I want to be free under whatever it's going to cost, because I know how bad these guys are. I don't want to be theirs. I don't want to be in the police state. I urge you, look at Dinesh D'Souza's new movie called Police State.
Okay. Thank you. May I have the paper? Thank you so much. I appreciate your answers.
Okay, this first question is real short, but it's not just for me, but it's for other people too. I filled out the affidavit with the two paragraphs that Roger Sales has on his website, went to a notary, and they asked me, which kind of notary do you want, the jurat or the other one that I can't remember?
An acknowledgement.
And I didn't know what to say, so he sent me away to find out. So do I get the jurat? Notarization or the acknowledgement?
It's preference. You can do it with a declaration. You don't even have to have it notarized. I prefer a notary, and I had mine notarized, and I got 20 copies. I always get more original copies.
You got 20 original notarized copies?
Yeah.
I asked for two, and he wouldn't do it.
Well.
Jurat. Okay.
Okay. Well, what they call a jurat and what the code calls a jurat are two different things. California calls their jurat. This only says that we're acknowledging this person signed the document. It has nothing to do with whatever the document says. That's what they call a jurat. In the U.S. Code, there are two jurats. One is under the penalty of perjury of the United States. The other one's under penalty of perjury of the United States of America. That's what you do. So if you write that under penalty of perjury under the United States of America and you sign that document, and then you go in to get it notarized, she's only verifying your signature. That's all they're doing, right?
But he still wanted to know which kind to do.
Well, yes. I'm just telling you, you couldn't have made a mistake. Whatever one you took would have worked.
Okay.
Okay? It's an authority. That's what the government is looking at, that this is the person actually verified that you're the person. That's what it's doing. I prefer under oath because I want them, if anybody's going to challenge my affidavit, I want them to have to go under oath. Okay?
So you want them to be under oath when?
Two. If they're going to challenge my oath, they have to go under oath themselves, and I think that that's a stronger position.
Okay. I have another question. Should I get back in line? Or,
I don't.
John, it's with regards to travel. Do you send the documentation to, you know, your passport? You don't need a new passport. Is that right?
Well, if you file the affidavit, you're going to want to send in your passport if they require it.
So what, send in your passport with the application?
Yeah.
I mean the affidavit or whatever.
Yeah, you're changing your status.
Okay.
They may want your passport.
And your driver's license, same deal?
Well, driver's license, again, you're going to have to do what I did. You know, if you want to change it, You can always lose your driver's license and have to go in and get a new one. And just when you answer the questions, just change the questions. Are you a U.S. citizen? No.
Failing that, would you just send in the affidavit with that?
Well, affidavit would supersede. I don't know what they're going to deal with. Just try it. See what happens.
Mm. Okay. Thanks.
John, thanks for your presentation. I just want to make a comment about before I met you and started this process and I was looking into it years ago, I went into the DMV and I signed my signature with the UCC code. And when they made me the copy of the license and gave it back to me, that was all whited out and just my signature. I couldn't believe it. So they whited it out so it wouldn't be on the actual license.
Wow.
Thanks for...
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I don't think they care anymore because they're given driver's licenses to every illegal alien in the bush, right?
Okay, we got just enough time for a couple more questions. I think you had a question. Come on up.
Boy, we really thinned the herd here.
So I'd been working with Freedom Law School, if you're familiar with Paymon.
Yes,
I was working with them first, and then I became aware of the national status. So I called and I asked one of their, experts on staff, why is it necessary to go through payments process, which is sending petitions to Congress and asking, or basically what he claims is that unless you're you live in the District of Columbia or you're a federal employee, there is nothing in any IRS or other statute saying you are required to pay income tax. It's voluntary. I said, why? So isn't it easier to just be, why not just become a national rather than not be a national, but have to, it's like there are those two exits from paying income taxes. And they claimed that that's enough. You don't have to become a national. That just as long as you don't live in D.C. and work for the federal government, then it's voluntary. So I'd like to hear your comment about that.
In your current status, you're living in D.C., State of California is living in D.C.
How is that?
Well, because it's a political subdivision of Washington, D.C. The state of California does not have any borders. California state has borders. That's the land. It's also under the 1849 Constitution, not the 1879 Constitution when they rewrote it. They had to rewrite their constitutions because of the flip in the government with the 14th Amendment. Okay? So the political subdivision of state of California is Washington, D.C., and it actually exists in the Hall of States in Washington, D.C.
I see.
Okay, now, payment, there are people that are willing to argue all day long, every day. The average person does not have a clue about how to argue any of this stuff. And they don't even know anything about the courts. They don't know the difference. They walk into an administrative court and they're arguing the Constitution, and the judge, just walks all over them. Okay? You can probably, through many different ways, try to avoid paying the tax, but at what cost to your life and your time and trouble? Why not just do what the government says to do to change your status with one sentence and get out of the deal? Why go through all that other crap? Take the government's own words at value. I mean, there it is. It's written down for you. Payment, he's been living off this stuff for 20 years, 30 years.
30.
Yeah, I know. I've seen all this.
The missing piece of information in the claims that he's making.
Well, there's nothing missing.
What's missing is the piece of information that state of California is living in the District of Columbia, which I had not an
understanding. He should be sharp enough to know that. Okay? He's been dealing with this for a very long time. He's got to know that. Listen, this Patriot, there are people that are climbing their hill and mountain and they're defending it. And when it's right in front of them, it's too plain. It's too simple. It doesn't justify all the life and time and money that they've collected from everybody all this time doing it the hard way.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
John, what are your thoughts about if a couple is just basically giving birth to a child? What would you do for the kid?
Have they filed their affidavit?
Yeah, but okay, when would you do that?
No, wait a minute. You're talking about the kid. They're giving birth. Have the parents filed their affidavit? Are they out of the system?
Okay, assuming the parents have, cool.
Okay.
Okay, now what?
They're going to file an affidavit, claim that child is their property, not the government.
Pre-birth, after birth?
After birth.
Okay.
They can get their paperwork all ready to go, you know.
Okay. John, okay, real quick, because we're trying to wrap it up, but I do have another question on taxes. So, okay, so you've done all the right steps, you've seen all the paperwork, you're good, you're a national, great. If the IRS somehow wanting payments, or they say, oh, you didn't file your tax, or whatever, if the IRS get cute, what would you do?
Well, first you're going to follow the steps and then see what they do, because what they
sure.
do is going to dictate what you do.
Sure, no, because I say that because, you know, they have been on it, basically, you know, shut down people's bank accounts.
Well, kind of a rule of thumb is if you have some obligation to them in your prior state, generally we say to take care of that if possible. Now, I don't do that in my own because it's fraud. I know it's fraud. So there are other ways to deal with that, but it's a lot more complex. So you just file your affidavit, send the notice to the Internal Revenue Service, see what they do. Okay, you can't guess or kind of make up what ifs. You've got to see what they can.
No, I know, but I'm just thinking of a game plan. If that was to happen, what?
You don't need a game plan yet because you haven't seen what they're going to do. Once they see what they're going to do, now you're going to game plan it.
Okay, thank you, John.
All right, thank you, John, for the marvelous presentation. And we will include all of John's information on the video, which we will post on our website. You can get to that video on the blue address link, which is on the back of our business cards. So you'll be able to access the video, and we're going to put all of John's documents on there for everyone to look at, and the links as well, so that you can follow up on all the things that John has told us. But John, thanks a lot. I just want to say, you know, John has had a huge impact on a lot of people, myself included. I'm a national. I've been through John's class 3 times, and I understand even more every time I take the class. And I strongly recommend you look into all the little nooks and crannies that John talked about, and investigate it for yourself, because you're going to find out that it's true. They've tricked us into accepting the status of serf. And John, thanks again. I appreciate it.
One thing, be sure to start joining the show, Roger's Sales Show. It's 6 days a week. And you can get questions answered there, and you can listen to the conversation. And if you use the radio net, I think it's radio.globalvoicenet, because there's an after show. The show goes for 2 hours, but then sometimes it goes for another 2 hours, continuing for people to ask questions and stuff. You can download all of those shows and save them and listen to them over time. So really, the community that we're building there is spectacular. This citizen handbook I'm going to be sending out to everybody is an incredible document. There's just several other books that are there. All these things are available to you. The things I'm going to send you are things that you want to be sure and read. If you're serious about learning about this, you've got to start reading this material. It'll enlighten you tremendously. This is just such a brief overview, and it's even briefer because we didn't cover half of what goes on in the class.
Right. Thank you, John. Listen, folks, I'm going to put all of the links that John is talking about into the video, so you're going to find everything there, and I'll also give you direct links underneath the video in the comment section.
Well, we got an audio, too, because Kenny does an audio, so you can do that.
Yeah, Kenny has all the audio as well on Podbean, and I'll give you the links to that as well.
Now, the way I do classes is somebody has to sponsor them because I don't do any, I don't charge. You know, all these other people around here, they charge for doing classes and doing paperwork for you and stuff like that. I don't do any of that. I give you everything I got. But you got to feed me. So so what happens is that you sponsor the class, you set it up, about 10 people, and I'll come and do a class. And it'll take that day and then give you all the paperwork I have as well and set up another class. Spread this far and wide because it's free.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.